Chapter 73. The orchestra played on, and the demigods of New York society wandered the galleries with champagne glasses in hand before clustering in tight-knit conversational groups around the crowded lobby to talk about the holidays and, when backs were turned and ears were out of range, also about one another. Isabella and Tiana made repeated trips to all the galleries in the two halls, rushing back to Isaac Mendelman at the Aubert exhibit after each patrol to assure him that the steady stream of people he was seeing was no temporary fluke. Aubert's work was the talk of the opening. Two of the museum board members, who had signed the expulsion letter to Mendelman, also paid a visit. But their looks of disapproval did nothing to diminish the enthusiastic chatter in the long lines of people waiting to see Aubert's revolutionary use of light and color. Mendelman simply raised his cane and smiled at the men, and then began to whistle a jaunty tune when the board members stormed out of the gallery. After all, what could they do? Thomas was standing at the bar with President Grant and Colonel Kipp, preparing to introduce them to Teddy, when Aata and 10 Tahitian men rushed up the hotel steps and pushed their way past the guards at the door. He felt their presence before he saw them, a rustling in the crowd, small cries of surprise from startled partygoers, and then the shrill ring of a policeman's whistle. He knew without looking that whoever had come through the door was after him. John Cronin, the president's principal protection officer, heard too. He shot a questioning glance at Thomas, who nodded his head in reply. Cronin took hold of Grant's elbow.
"We've got to go, sir,"
was all he said. Two other members of the president's detail materialized at his side and formed a circle around the surprised executive. As the small group began walking the president towards a side door, Grant made eye contact with Thomas and mouthed the words, "Good luck." Thomas placed a hand on Teddy's shoulder as Aata and his men surged to the middle of the lobby. "Run to the gallery," he said. "Tell Akoni that they are here for me, and that he must tell everyone to stay inside and close the doors. Can you lock them as easily as you unlocked them?" Teddy's face shone with excitement. This was an adventure. "Of course," he said. Thomas nodded. "Tell Akoni that once everyone is safe, he should come up the stairs at the end of the hallway and double back towards the front of the hotel. Do you understand?" Teddy turned and raced off down the left corridor. The crowd was not yet panicked, Thomas noted. But they were moving back to get out of the way of the intruders. That's when he saw that Aata was leading his men down the hallway to the right, with several policemen in pursuit. Of course, the Tahitian warrior had no idea which gallery Thomas would be in. It would take Aata at least 2 or 3 minutes to realize they were looking in the wrong place. As the orchestra picked up a new tune, Thomas made his way to the hall and ran quickly past all 7 galleries to the end of the corridor, where a velvet rope blocked off entry to the stairs to the second floor. He hopped over the rope, flew up the stairs, and then turned back to make his way towards the front of the building. There was a large double window with a crank opening there that he had noticed earlier. He could go out the window, shimmy down the tree that grew against the building, and wait in the dark alley across the street for the policeman to get the situation in hand before rejoining his friends. Remaining inside would only make the situation more dangerous for everyone. While he was outside, Akoni would make contact with the police and let them know what was going on. When he got to the end of the hall, he looked down over the banister to the lobby floor below and saw that the commotion was increasing. To his surprise, police officers were standing at the door blocking attempts by frightened gala attendees to leave. They must have been worried that some of the intruders would be able to get away. Aata was not there to kill him, of course, at least not until he had collected the bank's money. But where did that leave Fitch Donegan? If Aata had found him, he was certain the Irish assassin would not be far behind. Then he heard shouts and saw Aata and his men emerge from the gallery hallway on the right and begin pushing through the increasingly frenzied crowd towards the hallway in which Mandelman's gallery was located. He did not see the policemen who had been pursuing them, however. Aata's men must have overwhelmed them, which meant he must have been wrong about Aata's intentions. If they had done harm to the three police officers who followed them down the hall, they would have no misgivings about doing the same to him. He gazed down the corridor towards the stairs and then began cranking the window open. It was time to come up with a new plan. Where was Akoni? He heard someone running and whirled around to welcome his friend, but it was not Akoni racing his way. It was Teddy. The boy ran up to him, a mile-wide grin on his freckled face. Teddy, what? Where is Akoni? What are you doing here? Teddy took a deep breath. I'm staying in the gallery to protect everyone, he blurted out. He can unlock the door any time when they want to leave. Thomas heard the thundering of feet as Aata and his men made their way up the stairs. He could see the flash of knives in several of the men's hands and knew that both he and Teddy were now in mortal danger. There was no time to think. He had to act. He pulled a $10 bill from his jacket pocket, pressed it into Teddy's hand, and pulled the window all the way open. I want you to climb down the tree, he said hurriedly, and hail a hansom cab. Have him take you to Sweeney's saloon in 5 points. Ask to speak to Coots Sweeney, and tell him I am in danger. We are all in danger. We need his help. Do you understand? Aata and his men were on the landing now, and starting down the hall towards them. Tears welled in Teddy's eyes, but he shook them off. I won't fail you, Thomas, he said in a stoic tone. I know you won't, my friend, Thomas replied. Teddy hopped up into the open window frame, leaned out onto a branch of the tree, and disappeared into the darkness. Thomas pulled his pocket revolver and turned to face the Tahitian warriors, who were now halfway down the corridor. As he took aim at the center of the pack, he wondered if he had just put young Teddy in even greater peril by sending him into the most dangerous and unforgiving part of New York City. The Tahitians were only a few yards away when he fired his first shot. One of the men clutched his stomach and pitched to the floor, and the rest of the group came to a halt. The reverberation of the shot in the enclosed space echoed down into the lobby, and Thomas heard several people scream.
You men, put away your knives!
Aata shouted as he stepped in front of the group and turned to face them.
I need him alive!
To hell with you, Aata!
Another man growled.
The bastard just killed Mahana! There are 10 of us, and he has only that one revolver!
Aata was no longer in command of his little ragtag army, Thomas realized. Mahana's friend lunged forward with his long knife, and he fired again, striking the man in the leg. He pulled the trigger a third time, but nothing happened. The hammer clicked, but the round misfired. He drew the hammer back again, only to misfire again. He had backed up against the railing as Aata's men confronted him, and now, with no place else to go, he swung his legs over the handrail and leapt 4 feet out into space, grabbing at the folds of a brightly colored banner imprinted with the museum's name that hung from the ceiling to the floor. When the Tahitians poured through the front door and raced across the lobby, Jules Verne was in a deep conversation with the spectacularly endowed railroad heiress, Liv Vanderholt. He had just come from the Aubert Gallery, where he had seen to it that the two paintings he had asked to be set aside were marked with red sold tags. As riveting as the effect of Miss Vanderholt's décolletage was upon his psyche, the author briefly redirected his gaze to the hubbub. He knew instantly that these men were looking for Thomas, and he watched across the room as first the American president and then his friend disappeared into the throng. Then he moved with the crowd as it pushed forward to the exits, only to be turned back by the police before moving back into the center of the lobby. He held tight to Miss Vanderholt's arm when Aata and his men came back into the lobby and immediately tore down the corridor leading to Mandelman's gallery. In years to come, Vern would pat himself on the back for not losing sight of what was most truly important, even as the barbaric Tahitian raiders ran riot through the museum. His focus only drifted from Mademoiselle Vanderholt's delicious, creamy bosom twice during the 5-minute fracas. First, when two gunshots rang out on the floor above them, and next, when he watched in slack-jawed amazement as Thomas flew over the second-floor handrail, grabbed hold of the silk banner emblazoned with the museum's crest, and half slid, half fell to the lobby floor. He landed in a heap, and just as quickly pulled himself up and raced to the front door, where he knocked down a startled policeman and hurtled out into the cold, dark night. As Vern and the rest of the gala crowd watched in astonishment, two of the Tahitians tried to follow Thomas's escape route. They jumped together from the railing to the banner, but their combined weight was too great for the fragile silk to bear, and the banner was torn loose from its mooring on the ceiling, and the men fell onto the hard marble with the banner fluttering down on their motionless forms. Two more warriors climbed over the railing and dropped to the ground while Aata and the remaining intruders retraced their steps down the corridor and the stairs, along the hall, and out into the lobby, where they shot through the transfixed crowd and muscled their way past the remaining policemen. For the next 30 seconds, the lobby and hallways were as quiet as a church service. People were too frightened, too stunned to speak. Then, the orchestra leader pulled a flask from his pocket, took a long drink, and started his musicians in a rousing waltz as servers returned to the lobby with trays of champagne and fresh canapés. The only raid ever conducted inside the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art by Tahitian warriors was now the stuff of legend, and the only thing left for the creme of New York society to do was to make sure that the stories of their personal heroism in the face of extreme danger would never be forgotten.